Another really cool, kind of a challenging scripture. It might be easy to sum it up with just saying, mo' money, mo' problems. But there's more to it. There's more to it than just that. He's saying, hey, you might think that the pursuit of money will answer all your problems, that it will make you happy, that it is worth your life's pursuit, but it isn't. The answers you are looking for in life aren't with more money. That's not going to solve it all. If one of your goals for this year is to become more financially responsible, that is great. Don't hear me saying that. So we'll unpack what this means a little bit. But if you want more money in your bank, if you want more money in your bank account, what do you do? What do you do? Do you make more money? Like get an additional income? Pick up a side hustle? You know, find other ways to, you know, sell your stuff? How do you get more money in your bank account? So you can either you can increase your pay in some way, ask your boss for a raise, or you can spend less. Which one is more likely to get more money in that bank account? Which one? And, you know, of course, there's not one hard and fast answer, right? And maybe say both. But let's unpack this a little bit more. Which one is harder? Is it harder to earn more, or is it harder to spend less? I'll tell you this, spending less is a good practice in and of itself. Like I said, I believe it can be a spiritual practice. It fosters discipline. It practices self-denial. It exhibits some form of sacrifice. Our world is very consumer-driven, and I don't want to be a slave to that. And so it can be a form of detachment from the world, a form of detachment from material things. It can be something that forms you spiritually, meaning that it makes you more into the image of God and draws you closer to God by learning to spend less, to practice that self-denial. And of course, that depends on your angle, right? If you're spending less so you can stockpile the bank account and feel safe, that may not be so much a spiritual practice. That might be kind of a cop-out to say, well, it's a spiritual practice that I'm trying to get richer. That's not really a spiritual practice. But if you're spending less to remind yourself of who you are, of where your value as a person comes from, of storing up treasures in heaven, if you are practicing self-denial, if you are refusing to be manipulated by a world of advertising that says you need, you should always be in a state of want. If you're kind of getting off of that hamster wheel of chasing things that you think will make you happy or satisfied, it can definitely be a spiritual practice that draws you closer to Christ. As I've experienced with my money management, I'd say the better route is to spend less. And again, that's not a hard and fast rule, but I think that's actually kind of what the text is alluding to. You can see a few ways it's kind of saying that. But a great simple truth from the text that I think is very powerful is those who love money will never have enough. If you want money, if you desire it, you're never going to get enough. There's never going to be a place where you're going to say, oh, yep, don't need a dollar more. There's a repeatable study where they ask people, how much of your income, what do you need to be happy? How much money do you need to be happy? And it always varies. It always varies depending on who you ask. It's always just like 10% more than what they're currently making. Everybody always just wants a little bit more. So there's not like this hard and fast number where it's like, this number would make sense and this is the one everybody wants. No, you always just want a little bit more than whatever you're making. No one's ever like, well, I could do with $10,000 less a year and still be happy. You know, no one says that. They always want a little bit more. What I have is good. I'm okay with this, but I still, you know, if I had a little bit more, I could finally get the things I really want. Only about a quarter of Americans feel financially secure. Only about a quarter say, yeah, I'm financially secure. And there's some that say, maybe one day I'll be financially secure. But then there's a whole lot that is just like, never. Right? You know, I think a lot of millennials are kind of like, I'm just going to work the rest of my life. I hope y'all will let me be the preacher here until I'm like 80. But and again, that is also as much of a heart issue as it is an economy issue. But it is hard to feel financially secure when a nickel ain't worth a dime no more. John Rockefeller, he's the richest American in history, ever, still. Still to this day is the richest American in history. Now, he didn't have more money, but because of inflation, his money was worth about $400 billion today, by today's standards. $400 billion. That makes Elon Musk's $240 billion look like chump change. Which, if we're honest, this is like amounts of money that is like unimaginable. Like, we really can't even wrap our minds around how much money that actually is. But a reporter asked John Rockefeller, said, which of your million that you've earned is your favorite? Which is, kind of feels like a passive-aggressive question. But yeah, which of your million is your favorite? And he said, my next million. Which some might like that killer instinct, you know. This is, he's got this entrepreneurial drive, and he's never going to settle, and he always wants more. But it also sounds like an addiction. And that no amount of money will ever satisfy him. It's never going to fill whatever that is within him. It's just never going to be enough. So if you're in a place where you're thinking, I just need a little bit more, you might at least need some perspective and focus on what you do have, on what you need, and on finding contentment. Because chances are pretty good that itch you have for a little bit more will never totally be scratched. And then he says this pretty interesting statement. He says, with good as good increase, so do the people who consume them. And what's interesting, and I've mentioned this before about the Hebrew language, is it's word poor, meaning one word can mean a whole lot of different things. And so it's really easily to misunderstand or interpret things in a lot of different ways. And most commentaries say that in this case, he's actually purposefully doing that. He's saying sentences that can kind of have multiple meanings and multiple points. And so with this statement, as goods increase, so do those who eat them, is one way that it's stated. But one thing he's kind of saying is, the more you earn, the more money you make, the more you consume. And that's what I found. And that's kind of one of the reasons I say, if you want more money in the bank account, it's not about making more, it's about spending less. Because as you make more money, you spend more, right? If I got a little extra money, oh, I can buy that new tie or whatever. I can eat at this restaurant. I can order the steak instead. I can afford an additional payment. So the more money you make, the more you spend. So if you want more in the account, that's probably not going to be the answer. I know a guy who signed checks for doctors for years. And you would be surprised how many, you know, doctors are stereotypically wealthy. How many of them live paycheck to paycheck? One study found that 50% of Americans making six figures live paycheck to paycheck. Because as the money increases, so do those who consume it. So you spend more when you make more. Some think, and the way the text is usually interpreted here, is he's saying that the more you make, the more the leeches come. The more the people come in asking for handouts, for payouts. The more are hitting you up for their next business venture and they need that loan. The more that you have to kind of wonder, is this person really my friend? Or is there something in it for them? Do they have an angle here? Are they trying to get in my pocket? People might treat you differently when you have money. Growing up in high school, we had a nice house. We had a really nice, it was like a pretentiously nice house. And I remember feeling not braggy or cool or good when people came and saw it for the first time. I felt uncomfortable. A statement I heard a lot was, Brady, I didn't know you were rich. I'm like, I don't like that. I don't like making people feel that way. It made me uncomfortable. And there's a part of me, and they'd always say, like, you just seem so cool. You're not all stuck up. Which is kind of nice, but it's also like, yeah, I don't think, like, wealthy people are all bad and stuck up. Like, that's kind of an unfair stereotype. But it didn't feel good. People kind of thought a little bit different when they saw that. And it's funny because it's a relative term. Because my house today, I remember bringing a student over for the first time, and she said the same thing. She said, Brady, I live right over there. I didn't know you were rich. And that time I'm like, that's right. You know, I'm rich. I got this. Because it is relative, right? You know, being rich is a relative term. And I have everything I need. I'm well cared for. I've had other people come into my house and be like, this is such a modest house. Which I don't know. I don't know how you take that one, it's relative. One of the things he's getting at here is, you know, wealth changes your relationship with people, and sometimes that's not a good thing. Wealth can cause some uncomfortable stuff in relationships. I think Eminem sings about that. You know, there's like rich people who sing about these things. But then he says, laborers sleep well. The low income people. What he's saying is low-income people, they don't have a whole lot to worry about. They don't have a whole lot to lose. But the wealthy, they have all this stuff to worry about. They have all these things to protect. At any moment, they could lose any of it. And it causes them to kind of live in this fear of knowing at any point I could lose this. And I don't know who's really on my team. And they don't want to lose everything that they've worked for. But look, I mean, you know, as I'm listening to this, guys, I'm reading these commentaries, and I'm meditating on this text, I'm like, okay, I get what he's saying. But like, come on, man, if I had to choose my money problem, of not enough money or too much money, which one am I going to choose? Come on, man. Come on. So there's a part of me where I'm like, I don't know, but I get what he's saying. What he's doing here is praising simplicity. There is something easy and holy about simplicity, about living on little, about needing little. And he's saying, hey, there's more than like stuff. You know, you should enjoy relationships and the beauty of life without being in this state of need. And I like that. Our world is so busy and has so many things that we start thinking we need a whole lot of things that we just really don't. And just like the next raise doesn't fulfill us, neither does the next toy, right? The next car, the next gun, the next dress, the next trip. Eventually, we're going to want again. Eventually, we're going to want more. I mean, think about it, kids. Like, there was probably something for Christmas you could not wait to get, and you got it. And by now, you're probably already bored with it. You might be on to the next thing. There might be something else you're already interested in and want. So maybe it's better to just emphasize the simple things and know that fulfillment comes from somewhere else that money can't supply. And he says this, you came into the earth naked, you're going to leave. A very important truth that we have a hard time internalizing. Because we have a hard time like thinking that far ahead. We have a hard time thinking about next month, let alone what's after this life. They're saying all this stuff, it's not going to matter in the next life. You can't take it with you. And it seems so obvious to us. That's such a truth that we all know. Yeah, we know we can't take our wealth with us. But they actually lived in a culture that was very closely connected with Egyptian culture. If you know anything about Egyptian culture and Egyptian tombs, they actually thought you could take that stuff with you and that you should, and that you should stockpile wealth and put it in and we'll bury it with you. And in the next life, it'll go there and it will bless you in the next life. And I can't help but just feel really sorry for people who thought that way, for people to think the only hope, not only for this life and the next life, is wealth, for people to think that, well, if you're poor here and don't have what you need here, well, in the next life, it's going to be a bummer as well. There's no hope in that. And so I like the take of the Christian church is that, hey, wealth, it doesn't really matter here, and it's definitely not going to matter and the next life. You have hope of something way better than wealth or money could ever provide. And so he closes this section on money, verses 18 and 19. He says, "This is what I have seen to be good. It is fitting to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun." The few days of life that God gives us. "For this is our lot. Likewise, all to whom God gives wealth and possessions, and whom he enables to enjoy them and to accept their lot and find enjoyment in their toil, this is a gift of God." A little confusing, but he's making several really interesting and deep points. Basically, he's saying, one, accept the God-given state you're in. Realize that God, you know, if you've got it all, if you've got a lot of wealth, that's God-given. God's given you the skills. God's given you the position. God has got you there, and you need to acknowledge that. And you can also acknowledge at the same time, God is so in charge that at any moment he could take that away. And that's probably a healthy mindset to live with. It's not mine. God gives and God can take away, and I can live with that. But then he also said, you know, find enjoyment in your toil. Toil's that's a strong word. You know, when your kid's doing dishes or whatever, I don't know if you should say, hey, find enjoyment in your toil. But what he's getting at is, find enjoyment in what you are doing in the present. Find joy in life. Don't worry about chasing wealth. Find your joy in your actual work. Maybe some of you are told, I was told growing up, like, hey, don't, when you're, as you're picking a job, as you're picking a career, don't pick one based on how much money it makes. Find joy, but pick one that you're going to find joy in, so that it's not about the chase for wealth. It's about finding joy in the moment and what you're doing. Don't be as worried. He's saying, find joy in the toil. Don't be as worried about the payout. In life and in the journey, it's the kind of cliche, but it's important. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. Find joy in the moment. Don't worry about one day finding what you want, one day finding joy by accumulating enough wealth. No, it's about finding joy in the here and now and what you're doing. Don't waste away your life in a state of dissatisfaction and pursuit of things that won't last. It's like a hamster wheel. You're not going anywhere. Find joy in the moment. Find joy in relationships. Find joy in the beauty of life. And find joy in God. We have a God who's here, who is the author of all those things, who provides and who gives. And if you want to give your life to him, if you want to submit to him, if you want prayers over helping you to put money in the proper place, or if there's anything else you need, your church family is here. We want to support you, and we want to pray for you. If you have any need, come now as together we stand and sing.